welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And we're joined... Oh my god, I was trying to rush through it to keep him from doing a bit, but we're joined tonight by very special guest Rob Rector.
No, I'm sorry, Rob's not here. This is going to be John Four-Leaf Tayback. You might remember me from Tropic Thunder, but I found some new work.
Wow.
Are your hands?
No, well, you know, you namby-pamby podcasters, you need to see the real shit.
Like you did?
You haven't been in it like I have. Yeah, only four of us survived. Three of us got a podcast on the air.
Oh, God. That was the biggest surprise in this movie. But you know what? We'll when we get to the movie this week, we'll talk about how surprised we were when he turned up. But like, I had no idea he was in this.
None.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knew.
Yeah,
for that reason. I don't know if anyone's seen this movie except secret. For us.
That is possible.
That secret weapon.
All right, so first, before we get to the movie we're so obliquely discussing, we do have some random crap to address, starting with a video game. Just came out today, Man of Medan, the new video game from the makers of Until Dawn, which DM and I covered exhaustively back when it came out originally.
Yep.
We had a very fun ride through that game, and... we're going to take a look at this one as well, but I can already tell you it is a fantastic experience. If you like interactive movies, if you like horror games, if you like things that once again prove our theory that you should never vacation with an Ashmore brother, this game is there for you. Like, at this point, they've got to be nervous going on vacations in real life, right? The amount of times those two have been in movies where vacations turn deadly.
Well, I saw this hilarious meme, and it was like, don't travel with Tom Hanks.
That's so
it's
good.
It's the same thing.
It's so true. Yeah. It's the same thing. Oh, that's so beautiful.
I guess
yeah.
The thing could be said for this film. Don't be guarded by Mike Branning or whatever the hell his name
Mike
is.
Mike Banning.
Maybe
the fact that the president keeps getting attacked when he's in charge, maybe he's not that good at his job. Oh god, but yeah, we'll discuss that in a minute. But yeah, I can't recommend it strongly enough. It's an interactive movie that weirdly has a two-way player cooperative mode where like you're both playing characters inside the story. No one's ever attempted before, and it works surprisingly well. So I can't recommend this one enough. Dark Pictures, Man of Medan, check it out.
Cool.
Next up,
TV. Who's watching TV?
I am watching TV. I have just gorged myself through an entire season, a very short season, of it's a series, half-hour comedy series that was on Pop TV, which I've never even freaking heard of.
What is that?
I still haven't heard of it. That's how obscure it is.
And I only heard of it because I listened to a podcast called The Daily Zeitgeist. And they have a young woman on there, Lacey Mosley, who is a comedian, who is one of the co-stars of this. It is created by Laura Chin. She was in, a number, I'm trying to think of what the most recent one she was in. She's done, I think she was in Schitt's Creek.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay.
And she created, Happy Endings. She was in Happy Endings as well.
Oh, okay.
A very funny comedian. And in fact, it's all, up and coming comedians. Patty Guggenheim, who's actually from the Guggenheim family, and Melanie Field. Anyway, that's beside the point. They all play, it's almost like American Horror Story Redneck. It's four trailer park dwelling young ladies in their mid-20s whose lives are just a tattered mess. And their one friend decides that she's going to be all hoity-toity and go away to get her GED. So the one has this plan to kind of better herself by doing the same, but keeps getting pulled back down by the rest of her fun-loving trailer park dwelling friends. I'll say this, some of the comedy comes from she has one of those breathalyzers in her car. Mm-hmm. And
oh yeah, where you have to blow on it before you can turn the car,
to actually yeah. start, and they all celebrate every time that she does blow it and the car starts. And if she fails to do so, she has the 12-year-old neighbor. She'll pay a couple dollars.
Oh god,
that's the kind of comedy we're talking about here.
Oh but my god,
it is both depressing and just. Uproariously funny simultaneously, and it is just it's so spot on in some instances, but it really is a celebration of this friendship that that is very idiosyncratic, but it is also very heartfelt too. It doesn't get caught in the schmaltz, and in fact it almost plays like kind of a female version of Eastbound and Down with Kenny Powers. That kind of vibe. And again, it's only six seasons, or it's only six episodes, so it's a really quick watch. But
can we get the title one more time?
Yeah, Florida Girls.
Florida Girls. Okay.
You can't stream it. I know it's streaming. You can get it on the various platforms for like a dollar or something an episode. But if you have ever heard of Pop TV, or if you just suddenly realize it's one of the ones that comes on the lower tier of your cable schedule, then I do recommend checking that out.
Well, I'm going to want to check it out partly at least because it's looks like it's going to feed into a theory I'm currently working on that the entertainment industry, at least film and television, is being kind of taken over largely by upper class people since no one else can afford to act full time.
Right, right.
And that seems to be happening a weirdly large amount lately. And now that there's a Guggenheim just in a sitcom, yeah, maybe this theory isn't so crazy after all.
No, I think you might you should pursue that.
Yeah, because it seems like a weird trend that I've been noticing. Like yep. How many people in stand-up comedy, in television, and in film come from really rich families.
And I think it goes
back to move to New York. You have to move to New York to do that job. And who can afford to do that?
And also, I mean, really, let's face it. I mean, that is on stage. Stand-up comedy is really just a form of therapy. And for a lot of these people, you know, it's a way to get out your anger, aggression, what have you. And who has the most pent up? But probably those who live in those, you know, kind of effed up families that that are just obscenely wealthy.
Actually, that wouldn't surprise me at all. So, we also watched some movies this week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start us up, Rob.
Okay. It was a couple weeks ago, but I saw the latest Seth Rogen produced film, Good Boys.
Right. This is something that one of those things where I didn't hear about it at all until I started seeing posters. How was it?
Exactly. Yeah, I was the same way. And you know what? He's got this way. You can almost tell when you're in the presence now of a Seth Rogen comedy. He's got this way of mixing like heart and profanity kind of at the same time. You know, from 40-Year-Old Virgin. He made that when he was 23 years old.
It's
insane.
Not
made it, but
he was in it. Yeah. He produced and was in. Yeah.
23 years old.
That's and then crazy. Like 2 years later, he's doing Superbad. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's in that same vein. I mean, it's often kind of, referred to as like a younger version of Superbad, but you know, Sausage Party, which I just fully just embraced that and love that, Neighbors and so on and so forth. And it is in that same vein. And it's almost like a live action South Park, really. I mean, that's really the best way to describe it because they're just middle schoolers who go on this, you know, kind of, little adventure because they get mixed up in some bad things. Nothing too bad, but, I mean, you know, it's a who is it? Jacob Tremblay? Is that who it is?
Yeah.
The one from Room is a star of it, and a few of his buddies. But in the end, it gets really, really touching as far as just the friendships that we make, and how at that point, at that stage in our life, we feel like they're going to last forever. But
are you trying to say that the real bad boys were the friends we made along the way?
This is true. Yes,
God.
It is.
Sorry, I shouldn't.
Oh my god!
But where on the list of his films? Where would you like roughly rank it?
So I would probably say it's right in the around Neighbors. So kind of hit or miss. I like Neighbors. I didn't love Neighbors. And they can rely on sex toy jokes maybe one too many times in this. That said, it's still endearing enough that it's really a sweet watch with a healthy dose of vulgarity mixed in.
So it is really R-rated.
It is definitely R-rated, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
DM?
So I watched two movies.
Ooh.
I watched Death House.
Okay, first off, I'm so excited to hear more. Well, this would be the second movie called Death House you watched.
I guess that's true. This is the one that came out a little while ago with all the horror icons in it.
Right.
With William Pratt? That. Oh, no, that was just House. Sorry. Oh, and this one with Tony Todd and everybody in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Got it.
It is not good.
Oh.
It's 87 minutes.
Always a good sign.
I have no idea what the beginning and the end have to do with the rest of the movie.
What they have to do with is the movie was 10 minutes short.
And I am at a loss to explain exactly what happens in the film.
Okay, well, now
why.
I have to watch this movie.
Yeah.
You're like hitting all of my buttons here. Tony Todd, complete gibberish. Sign me up.
No, don't get excited. Tony Todd he's at the beginning and the end.
Oh.
Like, I can't call it like a framing device or anything because it's just, there's a scene with him at the beginning of the movie and a scene with him at the end of the movie. And I'm like, what? I don't understand.
He does like three of those a year. And I love that he does
that.
It's
got like nothing
to
do with what's going on in this movie. The most of the movie takes place inside of a high-tech prison. Where they either, well, they don't call it brainwashing, but essentially they brainwash their prisoners into being better people, or they create a scenario that just recreates not their fantasy, but their method of killing, and in order to study them.
Doesn't it seem like that there are several films of the similar nature where it feels like there is a kind of dirt level production company that comes in with the full backdrop or a green screen to all these horror conventions and says, hey, D. Wallace, do you have like 5 minutes and you can just read these lines really quickly? Or
yeah, just stand in front of this
green screen.
Yeah. And they have them in there for like 5 minutes. Thank you for your autograph and see you bye. And then they patch it together to make a movie.
It feels a little like that.
I've seen a bunch of those.
Because it's like, it is rather disconnected. So most of the movie is these like two federal agents, for whatever reason, are now, I guess, like...
Fox and Mulder?
They're assigned to the prison, or they're visiting the prison for whatever reason. I don't know. And so through them, we understand like what the prison does and how it works. But then there's this like prison riot and Kane Hodder is there. And the only way to get out of the prison is to go down to the basement where like the five worst people in history are being held. And they're immortal for some reason and they can control the prison. And then Kane Hodder gains immortality somehow. That's not really explained. And it's just, I don't get it.
I just want to say, how much would you love this movie is if they have like the four people who are the worst, most unrepentant, awful criminals of all time who are now immortal.
Because
the super criminal. And then the fifth one was Leona Helmsley.
And Tammy Faye Baker. Yeah.
Or Tammy Faye Baker. Just someone random in there who is like a famous criminal, but like not someone you'd associate with Charles Manson.
Yeah. Martha Stewart. They just in there for tax evasion or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh God. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have criticized you. The movie I was thinking of was called House of Death. Not Death House. That's why I was confused. And, we had this pack ages ago of movies and we called them dollar movies because it would be like 16 movies and I paid $15 for the pack and we just covered them all gradually.
What a terrible idea that was.
It was a great idea. We saw a lot of amazing movies, but the best part is the best one ever was House of Death, and I'll tell you why. And it sounds crazy, but DM can back me up on this. They had, when they were mastering it from the negative to a DVD, they put the reels in out of order.
Oh, no.
And no one noticed.
Yeah. I don't remember this.
You don't remember this?
No.
I can't believe you don't remember that, because we watched it together. And we were like, I don't understand what's happening in this movie. And then what happened was, we realized eventually that, oh my god, they're showing us the reels of this movie out of order.
Out of order.
Wait, who was the one director known in the 80s? It was an Asian director who would kind of stitch together two films. They're usually like Ninja Terminator.
Yes, I've seen. God, that like awful like RoboCop thing.
Yes, exactly.
Got, like a gorilla in it. Oh, what is it called?
I don't remember.
But that movie, he used to take like two different reels or whatever was lying around there, like,
and he would edit and dub it into a film. Yeah,
like, yeah, the faintest of narratives sticking together. Like that.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Oh, that's gonna drive me nuts.
Yeah.
All right.
So next, this is like the Expendables. Expendable.
All right, so next up?
The other movie I watched is The Super, because I'm moving, so I've decided to watch movies about, like, evil houses or evil landlords. Or
nice.
So this one has Val Kilmer in it.
Ooh.
And he's actually pretty good.
He's always pretty good.
He's always good. I don't know why I said it like that.
Yeah. He's a very talented actor.
But he's he kills it in the role. And it's,
wait, isn't there one called The Super with Joe Pesci?
Yeah, no, it's a comedy with Joe Pesci from the 90s.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand why you're confused. Not you're not going crazy.
Confused with, yeah, the Joe Pesci movie of the same name.
Okay, all right, good.
This is about a dude.
Joe Kilmer could have starred in that, too. I'm like, wait a minute.
Totally. I wouldn't know, because I've never seen it. It's about a guy who takes a job as a superintendent in this, like, ritzy New York high-rise. And has, like, three superintendents. And Val Kilmer's like been there for years, and he's really weird, and he's into like all this voodoo stuff. And then people start disappearing in the building. And so you think you kind of know what's going on in the movie. And then it takes this hard left turn.
I love that.
And for the better?
No, no, no. It's like, it is like, you know, you're on the way to Crazy Town. And you're just like, at the end of the movie, you're like, what the hell was that? Why? I don't understand why. And it doesn't like, and the movie has an out. The movie can redeem itself, but it chooses not to.
Weird.
It makes a very clear choice to not have a satisfying ending.
That is, it is weird to see someone make the conscious decision to make a worse movie right at the end. And it happens so often.
It's so weird. So, yeah. Death House and The Super. I don't know if I can really recommend either of them. This is
well,
what I do.
I'm definitely watching Death House, but maybe not The Super. All right. Next up, what do we have?
We have a list.
Love those.
Definitely.
List away.
So, today's list comes to us from Game Ranks or Gamer Anks. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I've never known how to say that name, and I never hear them say it out loud in their videos, so it's very frustrating.
I'm going to go with Gamer Ranks, just because, you know, sounds stupid. So, this list is top 10 Gerard Butler movies.
Oh.
is it counting down?
We are alphabetical.
Oh, alphabetical, the strangest type of list.
So,
are there only three in this top 10?
It's just 300 over and over again.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what was the movie called where he writes, where he's a ghost?
P.S. Well, not I a ghost. Love You.
P.S. I Love You. Thank you. I was going to say, is it just P.S. I Love You?
And the Bounty Hunter. Just
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. That's right.
He's made so many terrible movies.
Wouldn't it be Gamer? Because that's...
Oh, yes, Gamer!
That's awful.
An awful movie. That gets so bonkers at the end, it almost redeems itself.
Oh my god.
All right, go.
So, obviously, we start with 300.
Naturally.
I don't really have much to say about it.
I mean, we've talked about it here before. I'm not a giant fan of 300. Rob, do you have a different... Are you gonna be the differing opinion on this one?
Oh, no. You know, if I was a... like I said when I saw the movie, if I was a 13-year-old gay boy, I probably would have been...
all over it.
Yeah,
favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's who it was for.
Neither, so no.
Yeah. Okay. Next is Coriolanus.
I've never seen his Coriolanus.
I've heard
good things about that, though. Honestly, I've heard like that's one of his best performances. That's the one with Daniel Craig, right? Or no, Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
And it's a modern dress thing.
That I do not know.
I feel like it's one of those modern dress Shakespeare's, like Richard III.
Well, none of us have seen it. And
okay,
it
I just thought Rob might have remembered, but okay.
No, I just remember hearing that was his, like, that's by far his best performance that he's given.
Okay. All right.
All right, How to Train Your Dragon.
Actually, that's a really good movie.
Great movie.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. I'm not.
In fact, I can see probably where there's going to be three on this list that are all.
That would be great. If it's just the How to Train Your Dragon movie.
Well, this next one is How to Train Your Dragon 2.
What? You can't, we were joking. You can't do that list. You just have to say How to Train Your Dragon trilogy. What are you doing? Gamerank's giving up right away.
Yep.
Okay, next, Law Abiding Citizen.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
I rewatched this not too long ago.
Yeah.
And I remembered liking it the first time I saw it. I saw it again and it was still pretty good. But the movie has this weird thing where it thinks that Jamie Foxx is the hero.
Yeah, he is not at all. Totally agree.
It's like, you're so down. I mean, yeah. Does Jared Butler take it too far? He does, but you're still on his side. And then you get that insane ending where, like, you get an action movie line from Jamie Foxx when he murders a guy who's already in prison?
Yep. Yeah.
What the hell am I watching?
Yeah.
Also, one thing I loved in that movie was the 2 minutes of Michael Kelly in that movie. When Michael Kelly shows up as the guy who knew him in the CIA, and he will only meet in, like, a subway tunnel, and he's just...
Yeah.
I've seen that scene 100 times, but Michael Kelly is so good in that scene that it's like my favorite part of that movie. Okay, next.
Okay, next, Machine Gun Preacher.
I haven't seen this, but I have heard it was good.
No, me neither. Don't know it. Okay, moving right along. Olympus Has Fallen.
Yay! I would personally put London Has Fallen over Olympus Has Fallen, although really? That might be next, yes.
Oh,
I really liked
Olympus Has Fallen to London Has Fallen.
I totally get why. Yeah. I totally get why both of you guys prefer it. I'll talk about why I prefer London Has Fallen when we get into the thing.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, then we have, and I didn't even realize he was in this, Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, yeah. Yes, totally.
He was the star of Phantom of the Opera.
He's not a good singer.
And shows his singing is right up on par with his acting.
Oh, damn.
So brutal.
Shots fired.
Yep. No, he's not a good singer. And he was completely... He was nominated
for an award for that movie.
Which one?
All right, please be movie 43.
Okay, next. Oh, Reign of Fire.
Oh, I forgot he's in
Matthew McConaughey.
Whole movie.
Because it's like, I think that is the movie where it's like Christian Bale, and he's the star of the movie, and then he gets completely overshadowed the minute Matthew McConaughey shows up.
So half of these are dragon films, right?
Yes. God, it's 10, and you're right. Yeah, 3 of them are dragon movies, so a full third.
So Gamerank's clearly has
dragons.
Dragon movies.
Or at least when Jared Butler is next to a dragon, they like
that. Yeah, exactly. That's
fair enough. All right, the last one on the list, Rock and Rolla.
Come on, I really like Rock and Rolla.
I couldn't finish it.
That was the nadir of Richie falling in love with his own style.
Totally.
No, that's, and I hate to say that that's what I liked about it, but that is what I liked about it. It's like he disappeared entirely up his own ass.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely. When you believe your own hype too much, then you get Rock and Rolla. Yeah.
And I guess that's why I had such a good time with it.
Because you're off and disappear up your own ass and you can relate.
Hilarious. Oh, such a terrible person. But
yeah,
anyway.
Come on, you can't tee it up like that.
I know. I have to remember who you are. You're absolutely right. No, but it's like, I just, I love when a writer director, you know, I mean, it's like his double down, you know, when he gets all of the power and you get to find out exactly what he wants to do. Right. And it's like, he's got all of the power. He's got all of the money he needs. And it's like, this is the story I want to tell. And that's how you find out what a writer director really is. And at his most basic, Rock and Rolla is what Guy Ritchie is as a person. Just complete excess and ridiculous and in love with his own cleverness.
Yeah, but yeah. I think like Lock, Stock and Snatch are way better movies.
Oh my God.
Oh, they are. Totally. No, they're
so
much better movies.
I think like having sort of too much freedom to like money and power and whatever, like that actually, it dampens your ability.
No. I think when you reach the point where no one says no to you, you make movies like Rock and Rolla or The Island, right?
I don't know, because Christopher Nolan makes Inception, and that's like...
Yeah, or yes, Once Upon a Time in America with Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, no, and you're right. It can also reveal that someone truly is a genius. But I just love it when there are these revelatory projects where they get complete free reign and you just find out who they are. And that's what I love about Rock and Roll.
I'm sorry.
Yes, exactly. That's what The Phantom Menace is. Like, The Phantom Menace is we found out who he was, and then he spent two movies trying to pretend that's not who he was. He spent the next two movies trying to undo everything he said about himself in The Phantom Menace, because everyone hated who he really was. It's fascinating. But I mean, you're right. Objectively, well, not objectively, but it's like by all rational criteria, it's not as good as Snatch or Lock, Stock, or even what's the Jason Statham one in Vegas with?
No, I was going to say The Italian Job, but I know what you're talking about, but no, yeah, no. Yeah. He was bathed
the one
in blue
that Andre 3000 is in, you know?
Yeah.
Andre 3000 and Mark Strong and a bunch of people in that one. And I mean, that one's not as good as the other two, but it's at least it's a fun ride. Whereas Rock and Roll is just, what am I watching? But then again, Idris Elba and Jared Butler and Tom Hardy's there for two scenes. So it's like still got
Revolver,
good pedigree.
Revolver.
Revolver. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, Revolver. Yes. All right. Wow. I can't believe that made the list though.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really surprised that made the list.
No Geostorm, huh?
Oh, Geostorm.
I have yet to see Geostorm.
You've got
to
see Geostorm.
I know. It's shameful, really.
It is that year's Hurricane Heist. What's that?
You
they both came out in the same year?
It until you have.
By the way, how every now and then you're like, try to believe, like, I'm not saying we live in the golden age of terrible movies, but Hurricane Heist and Geostorm came out in the same year.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Gerard Butler, the one thing I'm sad to say that he hasn't done a lot of is horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone working on rectifying that?
Well, I wouldn't know because this week's horror movie is called Gags the Clown.
And it's not Jared Butler playing Gags the Clown?
It is not Jared Butler playing Gags the Clown.
Damn it!
As far as I know.
That'd be a great twist.
A small city in Wisconsin is terrorized by a mysterious clown who roams around the streets late at night with nothing more than a handful of black balloons. That sounds like he's naked.
How do you even know he's a clown?
He had a picture him with a ball gag in his, instead of a red nose, have a red ball gag.
Red ball, oh, right. The local news station scramble to break the story of who he is and what he wants, while a group of high schoolers see the clown's arrival as an excuse to create a little trouble themselves.
Oh,
the
no.
police try to maintain order in a city that has gone clown crazy, and a conservative podcast host vows to put a stop to the clown known as Gags while broadcasting his clown hunt on social media for the world to see.
Okay, we kind of need to watch this movie. Because, well, so someone, there was that whole, why are clowns walking around America at night? Because you're doing local news story about them. That's why they're doing it.
So,
but they've made a movie about that phenomenon?
Yes.
That's great.
But is the conservative radio host the hero of it? Is where
I can't imagine.
No, I don't believe so.
No, okay. He couldn't be. I'm sure he'll just be a crazy guy who runs around and like accidentally shoots one of the teenagers who he thinks is the clown.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. Like, I'm afraid of them, you know, kind of idolatry of Alex Jones kind of like you know, behavior and making that.
That would be, yeah. Oh, you're right. If they made that behavior, that would be
a nightmare. Quite as unhinged as Alex. I've seen the trailer.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know. I don't think podcaster is the right word because it's like, it's video.
Oh, okay.
So.
But then again, you know, Alex Jones does have a video podcast.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he does podcast? A radio show, but you can also watch it online.
So. Anyway, so this guy, he's out there hunting the clown. Clowns all over the place. There's a local news station who's also following this story.
Okay.
So I don't know. Like it looks like it has potential to be.
Is it the mockumentary format or is it a standard film?
It is not. Oh, no. Yeah.
Damn. That's too bad. But I mean, I'm definitely interested. Like. That people were going to make movies about that phenomenon, so I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Well, this is based on a short film, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll see.
Gags the Clown.
Gags the Clown.
We did actually watch a movie this week. We went to the theaters and everything.
Yes, we did. And a good theater this time, not a shit theater like last time. That's true.
So please, tell us all about the movie.
All right. We saw Angel Has Fallen. After saving the president's life, Gerard Butler, suspected of having tried to kill him, even though he would have had to have been in two places and once in order for that to happen, everything explodes. The synopsis concludes.
Nailed it.
Thank you.
So,
the Russian blood is a 10.0 for the landing on that one.
No, that was perfect. That was perfect. Okay, this movie is so much fun.
Yes.
We had a great time in the theater. We went and we saw this together. Not Rob. He lives in a different country. But the two of us went to see this movie together, and we had a really good time. It is a fun ride that is, I think, lives up to how much fun those first two movies are.
Although, way fewer stabbings. He only stabs, like, two people in this
movie.
It's
super disappointing that he stabs almost no one. When the first two movies...
he stabs everybody.
It's basically theorizes that he is a stabbing-themed character. To the point where I made a video counting up who stabs more people. Michael Myers in 12 films, or Mike Banning in 2 films. And it's close. It's Mike Myers, but it's close. Like, that is how many people he stabs. But the weird part is this movie, like the other two movies, were about him being in a contained situation,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Largely indoors, and that is where you get to do stabbing. Here, he's not so... I mean, he spends a lot of the movie outdoors.
You get to do stabbing anywhere.
Yeah,
you can't, no.
From experience. The best stabbing place is really... There's this little deli right around the corner.
Oh, my God. I will say that my biggest disappointment in the movie is there's this scene where they the guys have Danny Houston's goons have come to grab him from the car, and he's driving in the car with them, and he's chained by the hands and feet, and he starts wrestling with the guys, and then one of them yells, "He's got my gun," and I'm like, "You couldn't have grabbed his knife?"
Yeah.
He didn't have his knife. Do you not know why we're watching these movies? Grab his knife. But yes, it is has there been in cinema a worse frame job than they do to Mike Banning in the cinema?
I don't know, because I was thinking about this. It's like, oh, well, we found the van where they launched the drones and his DNA was all over that keyboard. I'm like, but he was on the water at the time of the drone launch.
There's eyewitnesses. There are...
Well, they're all dead, mind you.
There are no eyewitnesses.
He was dragged out of the lake. So clearly, he wasn't in the van while he was drowning.
And they do say that he set it up to remote control, kill everybody except for him. But he still had a major concussion on him, and I don't think he was dragged out of the lake. I think he pulled the implication is he pulled the president out of the lake, and then they both collapsed on the shore, and that's
regardless. The point is, there's no way he could have set up that attack.
No, of course not.
Not only that, but, I mean, and it's like they just erase the fact that he's already rescued the president. He's already taken down, you know, all these Arab terrorists in London. Yep. Like he has made his entire career based on putting his life in line of danger. And yet all of a sudden it's like, oh, nope, we found a couple fingerprints. So guess what? Yeah. You're going down, buddy.
And an encrypted file on the dark web. Oh, yeah. Man. There's nothing I love more right. than really, really bad computer talk.
But my favorite line, though, was his wife. His wife is like, don't you know? Like, why would he try to kill the president? He's going to be the next director of the Secret Service. Yeah. And then the cop's reaction is, yeah, and he knows what that means. So I guess he wanted to check out and get a big payday. I'm yeah. like, but becoming the director of the Secret Service means a safe, incredibly high-paying government job for a decade, and then you become a high-priced consultant for the rest of your life.
Yeah, so, or like, run for office. He already has a big payday.
He has a huge payday coming. He's like, he's not retiring. He's not losing his job. He's becoming the director of the Secret Service. So yeah, it's like, I've never seen someone framed worse than Danny Houston frames him in this movie.
He does a terrible frame job.
And there's this weird scene where, oh, sorry, go, Rob.
No, I was going to say, I think this is a great film circa 1995. And direct to video by PM Entertainment with Cynthia Rothrock or
Donald
Wilson, maybe Jack Scalia.
Yes, I know the exact era of these movies. Lauren Dean might show up as like the CIA guy who turns out to be evil.
But this adds to his oeuvre. I have this notion that we are going to be, well, our children or grandchildren will be watching TNT or FX in, or whatever incarnation it is, in the year 2040, and they will have nonstop Gerard Butler films back to back with Gamer, with this, with, you know, the Has Fallen trilogy.
In a very real way, he is the Chuck Norris of our time.
He really, truly is. I mean, they are just going to have the action-packed weekend. And Gerard it's going Butler. To have all of these just, these deeply great background-playing films that you don't need to, you can rush in and out, you can make dinner, you can change the baby, you can let the dog take it for a walk, come back and still join the film and not miss a goddamn thing. And still know who the bad guy is. You're going to give us Danny Houston? The only surprise would be if Danny Houston wasn't the bad guy.
How could he not be the villain? Right?
Good God. Pick somebody who wasn't like the leading man in two of the like largest villain roles of the past like century. For crying out loud.
He only plays villains. Like I would be so shocked if I ever see Danny Houston not as a bad guy.
Yeah, as soon as you played in the house, I was like, oh, wait, 30 Days of Night. Haven't you seen it? This guy's a vampire. Get him out of there.
It's so true.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God.
But what about Tim Blake Nelson, the wienerest-y guy you've ever seen? It's like, oh, all right, it's this guy.
Oh, wait, you mean the only other character they spent more than 2 minutes on?
Yes!
I know. Wait a minute. But he can't be the bad guy. His first line was saying he didn't like mercenaries.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, that is how much work they put into the script. We'll confuse them.
Such a wiener. He has to be the villain.
And this is the point I made. And I think Rob's going to back me up on this. So they chose to make him look exactly like Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, right?
Oh my God, totally, dude.
Exactly like.
Right down to the overbite.
Exactly, right? They dyed his hair jet black. They gave him those glasses. I'm like, this is Steven Mnuchin. That's and it makes me wonder, because he was a sleazy movie producer for years. I'm like, did he screw over one of the producers of these movies in a deal one time? And they're like, we're going to hire Tim Blake Nelson and make him look exactly
That brings up one of the things I'd noticed between this and London Has Fallen, because London Has Fallen is, you know, this horribly racist, xenophobic, you know, just pure, you know, from the 80s style action film.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, if you kind of step back and look at the politics of it, you know, you had drones that carried out the action. Like, you had the comment from Nick Nolte, who we haven't even talked about yet, which is the best part of the movie. But you have him talking about the horrors of war. You have talking about like Blackwater and all these for-hire mercenaries. I mean, it seemed like the politics of done a complete 180 in this.
Weird part is, I'm going to tell you something, and this is what I want. I'm glad you mentioned this, because I wanted to bring this up. I did a video last year, right, about the confusing politics of the Has Fallen franchise. Because the first movie, it has only one message, which is that North Koreans are subhuman monsters that need to die.
Right.
Like, it is such an incredibly racist movie. Yeah. It is shockingly racist. And you watch the second movie, right? And at the same time as Mike Banning is being incredibly casually racist in that movie, which he does a lot, the movie's politics aren't that simple. And I'll tell you why. Because the inciting incident of the movie is that essentially the U.S. government blew up a wedding.
Yes.
Right. Right.
And now they're like, you didn't have the right to kill my family and 500 innocent people to try and kill me, and you didn't even pull it off. And everything now is saying, and the message of the movie, yeah, on the surface is pretty racist, but the message of the movie is America made this happen.
Yeah.
Like America, yeah. And the film understands that is the crazy part.
Right.
And so it's like, the second film was very subtly attack on America's belief that 9/11 gives them the moral authority to do whatever they want for the rest of time.
True.
And that it's very subtle because Mike Banning is really horribly racist in that movie. Right?
I'll never forget reading the Variety review of that, and it said it was effortlessly racist. And
I was that, like, is that completely is... accurately. That is the best line I've heard to describe that movie.
It just summed it up so well.
So, but the thing is, this movie, like, so the first movie, super racist. The second movie, maybe America is causing some of these problems. It admits that. And this third movie, flat out, the thesis of the movie is that America's desire to be perpetually at war is the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, that's the film's whole thesis. And the idea that we got there, starting with Olympus Has Fallen, is crazy. Which is a movie that is literally about America building a super nuke shield so that they could nuke anyone they want without ever being in danger themselves.
Yeah. But then that gets the tables are turned on them.
Yeah.
But it's by the most beautiful man
who has ever lived. Yes. Rick Yoon, the most beautiful man who's ever lived.
But it's just ironic because, like, Banning is like the epitome of, like, old fashioned Ford pickup truck driving U.S. patriotism who, like, eats stars and shit stripes. You know, I mean, this guy is, and yet, you know, I guess the issue, the biggest one for me is that, like, he was not part of some shadowy organization like Jason Bourne or Ethan Hunt would be, like,
no.
You know, that knew more than any other U.S. intelligence did. Mm-hmm. He was acting purely on, you know, patriotic reasons. And yet he had no issues. Him and his dad, who just got done talking about the horrors of war, and they completely fucking obliterate all these. Like,
yeah, I know. God, that was hired.
You go hunt them down, and I'm just like, I it was so confusing.
It's a mixed message. It is a mixed message.
What are you trying to say?
You know, maybe you could argue that, like, well, this is all Nick Nolte knows is war. And so, of course, he rigged the mountainside to explode.
Well, and then that's the most interesting thing about Nick Nolte's character. He's a guy who they specifically say was a tunnel rat in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And he came back to America and essentially became a Viet Cong.
No,
he went and he turned himself into, like, one of the guys he had been chasing in Vietnam.
Well, I think
it's kind of an interesting concept.
I think the whole Nick Nolte thing is actually I think it's more complicated than the movie necessarily intends it to be, because like there's this, you know, backstory with Nick Nolte left Gerard Butler and his mom when he was a little boy, and he has all this, you know, these unresolved issues with his dad. And then they have this, like, big fight. It's like, well, you left me. And he's like, I had to because I was so badly damaged from the war.
Right. I stayed.
And Gerard Butler's like, you could have stayed. You know, you left because you had to leave. And you could, like, it's like, are you that naive to think that if he'd stayed, he would have gotten the help that he needed and everything would have been okay. Of course, you know that that's not what would have happened.
That's not what happened to vets ever. It's especially not what happened to Vietnam.
So it just like, it bothers me so much that he says that line in this movie where the whole movie is about warmongering and the state of the world today because of our inability to not constantly be at war.
And you bring up such a good example of that, because why else would they show us kind of, they hinted at an offshoot of the story that could have been very interesting of him addicted to painkillers, combating the pain, hiding it from his wife. Like, why would you even include that? And then coupled with Nick Nolte's, you know, fiery speech, and then just drop it all together so that he could get all Stabby McStabberson and, you know, and become Harry Houdini in the back of a cop car. I don't know.
Well, no. And then especially because like you watch the movie and you're saying, but they clearly wanted to say something about PTSD. And then they're like, oh, we spent the whole movie saying we were going to say something about PTSD. Let's do a comedy sketch about them going to a sensory deprivation tank.
Oh my God.
What the hell was that? Let's just undercut the entire point of our movie in the last minute of our movie.
Let's pivot our franchise towards comedy, because clearly we've run out of ideas at this point.
Let's appeal to those 5 viewers left who still liked P.S. I Love You and whatever other comedy, whatever romantic comedy.
They all flocked to the theater to watch Mike Banning stab people.
Oh, God. What was the And the thing is, like, there's something interesting, like genuinely interesting going on with Danny Houston's character, because he's a guy who so can't give up war.
Yep.
That he's willing to go and murder the president just so he can have another war and feel relevant again. Because he doesn't know who he is if he's not at war. To the point where when the FBI agents show up, the game is over. They know he did it. It's over. And he still says, now let's go kill the president.
Yeah.
Even though he knows he can't get away with it. He knows he's been caught. He knows he can't possibly get away with killing the president. But he's like, I got to go out shooting because that's all I am.
Right.
So I have a burning question.
It's kind of interesting.
When it comes from, when you're talking about Danny Houston, why, maybe you guys can answer this for me. So when he's receiving orders from heretofore unknown, like we didn't know at this point it was the vice president. Blake Nelson.
We did know though. Come
on. Of course we knew.
I know. I realize that.
The audience theoretically does not know that it's Tim Blake Nelson.
There's work supposed to. Why was his voice covered in that, like, you have to follow the orders, you know, like Darth Vader's mask, when he's just talking to Danny Houston? Like, Danny Houston knows who the fuck he is.
But... I know.
What was that about?
Again, it's just where they just lie to the audience. Like, you can reveal that Tim Blake Nelson's the bad guy right away. We knew Tim Blake Nelson was the bad guy. No one was surprised.
In silhouette with just, like, you know, a few whites on him. Oops, sorry about that.
Yeah, it's such a... And there's a couple of interesting things. One, like I said, is the film's criticism of America's state of perpetual war is super surprising for the franchise. Totally. And it's a really good message, but it's so off-brand for this franchise.
And undercut by its own action sequences.
Oh, no, absolutely.
No, 100%. Really good action sequences.
No, there's a lot of fun
for the most part.
Yeah.
Do you know what my overall favorite moment in this movie is?
What?
When the mercenaries show up at Mike Banning's house, and they're going to kidnap his wife and daughter. And then Nick Nolte stabs them both to death.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'm your father-in-law. And he's like, she's like, how can I know that that's true? And I'm like, well, he just stabbed two guys to death.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, really, everyone's in the family, obviously.
I thought when they recast what's her face as the wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, are they just like, is this an attempt to kind of soften her character? Because she's really not very likable.
In the
other two movies.
It's true.
But she was equally unlikable
It's weird.
She really kept the essence of the character, and I don't know if I like that quite as much.
I am all for any work that Piper Perabo gets. I was just mentioning her name to a friend the other day, ironically, saying, whatever happened, she was the It Girl for a while, then Coyote Ugly, and then she just vanished. And it is good to see Piper getting work again, only because I like saying her name over and over again.
It's a fan. Piper Perabo is one of the best names to say. Everyone
absolutely
knows.
Absolutely. That said, you know, she, it really, they could have had, you know, they could have done a deep fake and just had, you know, a compilation video of Raja Mitchell's or whatever her name is, and have her.
Raja Mitchell.
Yeah, have outtakes from her first one, because really there was no reason for her to be in there in any place.
At all.
Yeah.
I have a question, and this is going to be something, and maybe I'm completely backwards here, but first off, we saw this, Lazy Writer was there as well, and fun fact, she didn't know that was Jada Pinkett Smith. She did not recognize her.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm like, really? But yeah, for whatever reason, she just like didn't grasp that it was her for the whole movie.
She hasn't changed. I mean, in fact, she looks gorgeous.
Yeah, she's looking great. It was just kind of, which is why I thought it was so weird that she didn't recognize her. But my question is,
fashionable agent out there, man, with that little ski cap of hers and everything.
I know. It's quite an outfit, and she's very short for an FBI agent.
Yeah,
but the question I had about her character was, and this might be completely crazy, was she added to the movie later? Because there's this really weird bit in the movie where right at the end, they're going to address that he's going to arrest Tim Blake Nelson.
Right.
And they loop in a line that says that that Jada Pinkett Smith found the evidence that you had been paying Danny Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And it's looped in. So obviously that was not originally part of that scene. And it made me wonder, like, is she only appears with any of the main cast in like one scene each, and like all in the hospital, to the point where it made me wonder, was her part reshoots when Gerard Butler was in that motorcycle accident and they didn't know if he was going to be able to finish the movie?
Oh, wow.
Did they add in her character as kind of a stopgap in case he wasn't going to be able to come back and finish it?
I don't know, because it could be that that line was added because someone realized at the last minute it didn't make sense that they would know.
Be able to catch him. Yeah, no, that is a problem.
That it was Tim
That
Mike
is
Nelson
also possible.
Nobody talks to each other.
I just found the fact that she never... That's true.
But the fact information.
The fact that she never interacted. I know, right? Just the fact that she never interacted with anybody really made it feel weird for me. And then when I noticed that loop line at the end, I wondered, because he famously got hurt and the movie got pushed back and delayed. And I was wondering if maybe she was brought in.
No, I think you often overthink these things.
Oh, that's completely.
Well, it was, I mean, it does go along with it. It does seem very shoddily edited. I mean, back to the hypercuts. I mean, honestly, every fight scene, close-up fight scene, could have been edited from the previous fight scene's outtakes.
That's true.
Because there were just so many quick cuts and jump cuts.
And then there's that one truly awful CGI with when they're running from the debris cloud.
Oh, that was
That's like from a different movie. It was
cam that they have when the every time a helicopter zooms, like, you know, from stage left or stage right. And I don't know if you notice this, but every time it does, they have that, you know, After Effects, like, blur the camera shot.
Yes.
As it's up close. I'm like, as if the entire Earth is like starts to rumble every time these helicopters zoom past it. It doesn't really make sense
because the movie begins with like some really gorgeous slow-mo.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agree.
Have that training scene. I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. And then all of a sudden the camera's moving on. I was like, but I don't, but you clearly have a tripod. So I don't understand why you're not using it.
So frustrating. And by the way, speaking of frustrating, most frustrating scene in the movie, he calls his wife from a truck stop and he's like, I'm okay, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, the FBI is listening on the phone and there's 1,000 reporters outside because they think he killed the president or tried to kill the president and killed 18 people.
Right.
And he doesn't. And his next line isn't, oh, that's great. Walk outside, tell the FBI and all the world's media that Danny Houston did this.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, there's no reason not to keep that a secret.
Yep.
Yeah. You're actually more, you're putting your wife in danger if you don't tell people that Danny Houston did this, because she almost gets kidnapped by these guys because you didn't tell her that Danny Houston did this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, there's no downside to just calling, like, Danny Houston did this. I've still got to go underground because I might get shot and I need to protect the president. But Danny Houston did this.
Yeah.
It's so baffling.
So
oh, yeah, but is it the least of the three of the movies?
No.
I don't know, because I think I'm... because I just didn't really like number two. I like the first part of the second movie, but I think it does drag.
It
and
gets
it's a
bogged
little,
down.
A
yeah,
little
that's true.
Too convoluted. Well, not convoluted, and not up its own ass. It's just a little too... A little too raff, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I loved the developing politics in the second one, but I will agree with you that this one is probably better than the second one.
Mm-hmm. If only because everything blows up.
So I don't many think explosions you hear me laughing in that scene.
With delight,
of course. Well, I almost couldn't. We were in an AVX theater, but yes, the whole McNulty scene where there's just bomb after bomb.
Oh my
bomb
god, it was hilarious! Like to comedic effect, there were so many explosions, and it just kept going on.
Can there really be another set? Yeah, there are.
Yeah,
another set of
they like feel at one point they were just like playing for laughs. At that point, I'm like,
oh, totally.
Yeah,
no, but there's a whole thing where it's played as comedy is like. Quick, you get that one.
Yeah,
that one.
Pull
the
that
wire,
string over there. Pull my finger.
I will hope for a fourth if only it is Nick Nolte has fallen. if Daddy Nolte, if Mountain Man Nolte is in it, I am so down for it. The one thing, and this is completely honest, I know we're joking around. Now, was his shaking... Purposely?
I don't know.
I don't think it was.
Because he was shaking really hard at one point, but then it kind of went away.
There was two scenes, one where he had coffee and another where he was holding the radio. And his hand just had tremors.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, is this from his PTSD or is it something that is beyond beyond the actor's control?
Yeah.
I
don't
think
know.
It's actually just Nick Nolte because he was much more steady in other scenes.
Right, okay.
And I mean, you'd have to go down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out what his character's emotional state was in each one of those scenes if you wanted to say was it a choice. But my guess is that's just Nick Nolte.
And I kind of did a search to see if there was any reports for it because I obviously, you know, if it was a character a tick of his character, a choice that he made, then more power to him. I think that even says more about him as an actor.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it is something that is obviously beyond his control, I did not want to, you know.
Yeah.
No, obviously.
No, I didn't notice, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't
yeah.
tell.
But I still watched the hell out of him kick more ass.
Yeah, no, it was.
At 77
He got
old.
To stab, come on, he got to stab a bunch of people.
He
that
did.
Was great.
Yes. Yeah.
One thing I will say.
Think of all the wiring he had to do to set up all this.
I know. Well, he's got nothing but time up on that mountain.
He's been up there for 5 years.
I'm running all that cable out there.
I know.
DSL.
And it was clearly worth it.
Oh, my
totally
God.
Totally worth it. It's like that movie, that wonderful movie, Disturbing Behavior, where, what's his name? William Sadler had spent like 10 years preparing for the unlikely situation that a guy would start making Stepford Wife teenagers who could only be defeated by sound cannons. I had this all ready to go, just in case this exact thing happened.
I mean, Theodore Kaczynski just had, like, wall scribblings and canisters with nails in it, you know? Yeah, so Unabomber couldn't even pull
respect
that shit
the
off.
Effort. That's the thing. Although, one thing that I found hilarious in this movie was that the film honestly didn't seem to understand what the job director of the Secret Service is.
Yeah.
Because it's like, director of the Secret Service is you're not hanging out with the president.
No.
It is, you are in charge of a 15,000 person
federal
law enforcement agency that both handles protection for the president and counterfeiting and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
It is an office job.
In the middle of a lake and...
No, it's like, you got Lance, Lance Reddick. You got Lance Reddick just hanging out in the White House.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if you're going to take over from me. Well, I might get that job. I was like, what are you doing there? You should be at the Secret Service headquarters doing office things.
Right.
It's so bizarre. Like, it's just so weird that a movie about the Secret Service kind of has no idea how the Secret Service works.
But that
is the least of the film's issues with reality.
I would love, I would lobby and start a Kickstarter campaign if they did, like, Magic Mike Has Fallen, and then have this Channing Tatum crossover from White House Down.
Oh, that would be so beautiful.
And him and Gerard Butler team up. That would be fantastic.
It is. I think the craziest thing about these two movies, though, is that these two franchises, is that one of them started out overtly political. And that was The White House Has Fallen. And people thought it was crazy at the time that, what? You're telling me a plot where the Republicans are so pissed off that a black man has become president that they team up with Nazis and white supremacists and Russians to take over the government? That's crazy!
It was so bad.
It's like, yikes, the most prescient film of the past decade. But the funny part is, this franchise has gotten more political as it went on.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing. Yeah. So you're right. It would be hilarious to see a crossover of those two franchises.
Well, now after that last comment, I'm going to go take a bucket load of Valium and,
I'm sorry.
And live in that world that you just mentioned.
I know. It's pretty terrifying sometimes. Mm. All right. I did not mean to bring you down. Do we have any final thoughts on the film before we go? I'll let depressing everyone be my final thought.
I liked it. I had a fun time at the movies.
Toast.
That's about all I have to say.
Good. It is a fun time at the movies.
Could have done with a bit more stabbing. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Obviously. Rob?
Yeah. It's going to make a fun cable viewing in a number of years, because again, there is no thought that you need to have that you cannot exit this film at any time, re-enter, and still be completely,
you know, exactly where
everything
you are.
Is happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. All right. So that was Angel Has Fallen. And yes, the angel of the title is Gerard Butler. He's the one who fell this time.
Oh, I just heard him get his wings.
Oh. All right. So I guess that's that. Does anybody have any narcissism they would like to watch?
We are getting ready to, speaking of wings, we are going to be doing a screening of The Crow. If
featuring, ooh.
Yeah.
Do anything special for The Crow?
What's that?
Are you doing anything special for The Crow?
No. I'm going to be dressed up in my Robert Smith best, but...
not the hair, though?
And listening to a bunch of Cure, but no. Nine Inch Nails and so on and so forth. But no, I will say, though, that our Labyrinth screening last month...
Yeah, how was that?
Sold out.
Right on.
Yay.
Over 200 people showed up. We gave bubbles and whoopee cushions to the kids. So when they walked over the Bog of Eternal Stench, there was just a theater full of farts, and it was glorious.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It was great. It was great. Yeah. So
that's fantastic.
Revival House, Milton Theater, third Thursday, The Crow.
Awesome.
Delaware. Sorry.
Kind of relevant. Slightly relevant.
Milton, yeah. Ontario? I don't know.
Plenty of town there, Milton.
We still may need to get more detail there. Wait a second. Where?
DM?
Nothing really going on. I guess eventually we'll have new episodes of True North Crime and Chicks and Dicks, because I have finished reading the book. So it's just a matter of sitting down and talking about it now.
Great. For me, constant new content at Hidden Object Guru channel. And also... we've got the Profiling Criminal Minds podcast just did a 2-part episode about the second season of Mindhunter. So drop by any podcast source of your choice and pick that up. I think you're going to have a good time with it. So yes, I guess that's that. So, oh yes, and join us here back next week. I know this is crazy. We never announced this, but Rob is going to be joining us again, hopefully, because next week is going to be our giant coverage of unbelievably giant movie, It Chapter 2.
It is so long.
Yeah. Yes, I know. I looked it up and I'm like, it's over 3 hours.
Oh my God.
I know.
It's going to be a whole
Scorsese present in front of it. Right?
Oh,
it's a whole day at the movie going to see it too. And wow. I can't, on one level, I just can't wait.
I think it's longer than Grindhouse, honestly.
That's going to be crazy. All right. Join us back here for that. But until then, is there any other way to get in touch?
You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us about how disappointed you are that Gerard Butler doesn't stab more people in Angel is Fallen. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you're listening on an app, give us 5 stars because we need those reviews. We don't have any.
Okay, so as always, I want to thank you for watching and say that until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
And I've been John Fourleaf Daybeck.
Have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.
Your panties.